I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, holiday books. Plenty of time for all those arts and crafts projects before Christmas. A little tight if you're planning for Thanksgiving and Hanukkah. Here with their picks of the season, Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Mindy.
And Melanie Lowers, books editor at the Cape Cod Times. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning, Mindy.
We're starting with crafts because if you remember, those who were listening to this show a couple years ago, that we had this Falala Felt book that was such a big hit. And now we have the sequel.
Sometimes it's just exciting to have a book in front of us. And when it's a book about felt, it just really gets exciting. And this one is called Heartfelt Holidays, 40 Festive Felt Projects to Celebrate the Seasons from the creators of Fa La 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 Felt. And this actually, because it has all the holidays, this is not just one holiday, it can be very useful for a couple of reasons. One is there are some great things that you might make in here as a present for somebody. For example, they show you how to make no-sew wine bags. So if you want a felt wine bag with a beautiful felt bow on the front, really lovely. So that's one thing to look at. But there's also, you'll find in here, Happy Hanukkah mice. Now, I do not know that mice, in fact, I'm quite sure mice have nothing whatsoever to do with Hanukkah.
But that is a
However,
cute little mouse.
It is a really cute mouse with a little blue vest and a little Jewish star on the front. And so very, very cute and could be used to make it into, you could turn it into a birthday mouse, a Christmas mouse. I'm sure there are other things you could do with this, with the Hanukkah mouse, but very cute. And there are templates for all of these projects within the book. There also, it's a little late for this, I understand. You know, Thanksgiving is tomorrow, but there is a beautiful autumn leaves table runner in here, which has just these great felt leaves and great colors all across the runner. But again, something you could start now and perhaps be ready for next year. And one of the most fun things in this particular edition is the Felty Family Portraits.
I love those.
And as it says, what dad wouldn't love a Felty Family Portrait. Use photographs and felt to make pictures of his loved ones.
I like the cat.
And they have a great, there is a great cat. And they're basically taking photographs of people and turning them into portraits made out of felt. And they're actually really cute. And I think they would be great fun and somebody would love a felty portrait.
All right, confession time. You also brought one of your own little projects just to prove to us how long you have been into felt.
I did. I'm sorry you can't all see this. Maybe we can put a photo up on the Facebook page. But there, I did bring with me my own little felt creation, which is I made in sixth grade. It is a little felt mouse, and it has big felt ears. And amazingly, is still in one piece other
shape.
Than one missing hand.
Yeah. And
is
we now are, a Christmas We will ornament. Put a picture of that little guy up for sure.
It's too cute.
It is too cute.
It's too cute. Okay, and the cuteness factor. And cuteness is not just an American thing. I brought The Night Before Christmas in Crochet, the complete poem with easy-to-make amigurumi characters. And this is by a young woman named Mitsuki Hoshi. And this is based on the Clement Moore poem that we all know, The Night Before Christmas. This is a new book, and at least new in English, originally published in Japanese. And the author is self-taught in amigurumi, which is, according to the Japanese, A-M-I or ami is crocheted or knitted, and Nui Gurumi, and I know I'm butchering this, is stuffed doll. Oh. So the Japanese love to make stuffed animals and stuffed dolls of all sorts and then add anthropomorphic features to them, you know, really imbue them with a lot of human characteristics. But in this case, they also go by the motto of create everything with wool. So everything about all the characters in the book is made with wool. And she launched her website for this in 2002. She has 18 books so far. And they're absolutely adorable. It's mostly single and double crochet. Nothing fancy. Mm-hmm. All the directions are in here, including the very basics, you know, tying on and stuff like that. And then she lists all the characters, everything from Santa to the kitten, to the star ornament and stockings and the boy and girl and a mouse. You can crochet a mouse and a fox and an owl and, of course, the reindeer. And all the directions are included. And then in the front of the book are all the is the poem itself with little scenarios with the little crocheted dolls and ornaments in them. It's absolutely adorable. this is not a short project, but over, you know, over a 6 month period, just taking your own time, someone with basic crochet skills could probably put this together. It's absolutely adorable. And they're typically animals, but also in this case, she's got people.
Mm. Well, and I also have a crochet, knit and crochet book. And this is one of those books, sort of like any book I see about knitting socks, I feel like I need to learn how to knit socks. Well, this is the same sort of book. It's called 75 Seashells, Fish, Coral, and Colorful Marine Life, Made by Knitting or Crocheting. And I honestly think on Cape Cod, these
big
little
knit,
items
yeah.
would be huge on your tree. They would look great. They have, you can knit a sea urchin shell, a sand dollar, a hermit crab. There are patterns for all of these. And you could do a sea anemone, all kinds of creatures that are in here, a seahorse, any of these would look great.
They're
as
so
ornaments,
cute, yeah.
as well as just as sort of cute toys. And in the back, she actually has some crafts that you can make using these things. So, for example, she's got a necklace that is all little knitted fish, which is, again, just really cute. And there is also a seaweed scarf, which I think is very dramatic
yeah,
looking
very pretty.
And very lovely. And if you want to, you know, if you know already how to knit or crochet, you'd have plenty of time to create one of these before the holiday.
Exactly. And we are talking holiday books. We're in the craft section right now. But if you have something you'd like to add to our list, 866-999-4626 and then press 5. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. What have you got, Melanie?
Speaking of socks and knitting, I brought the sort of the quintessential Scandinavian Christmas stockings, classic designs to knit for the holiday by Mette Handberg. And this is a new book, first out in Norwegian, but now translated from the Norwegian into English for the first time. And it's a list of all the kinds of kind of classic Norwegian patterns that we associate with that Scandinavian style of Christmas mm-hmm. stocking. And actually, if you think about it, most Christmas stockings in the United States play with that style, you know, the rims and the edges and the colors, for example, like yellow and black together or red and black together, that kind of thing, and different patterns. You know it when you see it. There's mm-hmm. stars and hearts and things like that. And this beautiful little book, she writes in the front of it, Christmas stockings have a long tradition in Scandinavia, even earlier than when getting a visit from the Christmas elf in person became customary. A long stocking or sock was hung up the evening before Christmas so that the elf, on his run through the night, could put some treats and other small items into it for the children to find when they got up on Christmas morning. After the war, and I'm sure she's talking World War II, became even more common for the Christmas elf to visit on Christmas Eve. And the Christmas stocking tradition has changed again, appearing during Advent and Christmas tree parties, although bags often substitute for stockings, which isn't any fun at all. All the instructions are here. This is not simple knitting, but for a reasonably practiced knitter, you take your time, follow it line by line. And she even has patterns for leggings, which I bet would be absolutely gorgeous, like little boot or shoe toppers, and some ornaments, mittens, a gorgeous teddy bear stocking, just some beautiful items. And again, you know, I think that this is the kind of thing that if you plan to do it, you're not probably going to be able to do it for this season, but for next season would be absolutely gorgeous.
And I bet kids would love those stockings because
oh, sure.
they probably stretch.
Well, and
yeah.
she also has, she has two templates also for letters so that you can personalize these stockings with several different types of letters for names and things like that, nicknames. They're really cute.
Yeah. All right, this is cake pops. What?
Well, this is sort of the split between cookbook and craft.
Okay.
It's called Cake Pops, the Holidays Edition. And what these are literally, she's baking cakes and rolling them into like round balls and then dipping them in various kinds of chocolate or any kind of candy that you've melted, and then creating faces on them of one kind and another. So you can create, it turns out, almost anything into any cake pop into something. And she starts with giving you sort of the basic instructions on how you make a cake pop, because they all start basically, you know, it's a ball of cake is what it is. But it's the decorating that is really emphasized in this particular book. And one of of the fun things about the book is to see what she's used in order to create different shapes. So, for example, she has a cake pop, which is a polar bear, and the polar bear has ears. So I'm thinking, well, how did she make the ears? Well, she used M&Ms for the ears, yeah. Of course. So, and then dipped the whole thing. So it looks like one piece. It looks like part of the cake. And another one she's created light, like Christmas light bulbs. And underneath there's this silver part. And we're like, what is that? Well, she took two lifesavers,
it looks like
to make the
yeah.
base. Right. Yeah.
But how did she make them silver? She dipped them in something.
Well, there are candy things you can dip them in.
Gotcha. And this is pretty elaborate.
Some of these are quite elaborate, and you really have to. You also have to be. I think she clearly is a perfectionist. I mean, these are all beautifully done, but there are also dreidels that are in the pop cakes in the shape of dreidels, which, as it turns out, have Hershey's Kisses attached to the bottom of the pop to make it look like a dreidel. Anyway,
and so it'll
very
spin.
Fun. So yeah, and you of course can eat it. And there are some very complicated ones like these cardinals, which and the cute part is they sit on a little perch that's made out of a pretzel stick.
Oh.
But you have to be,
that
I think, very
really
ambitious
hard, yeah.
to make some of these. But I bet they are very tasty to eat.
All right, so we're into cookbooks
But
now,
you know,
right?
also, if the local craft stores have all kinds of things that would go into making cake pops.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
all those little pieces and stuff. So it is possible to find these things and sort of
Well, it might inspire you to create your own. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Right, and she has a whole section on here on resources. If you don't happen to be near a big Michael's store or something, there are other places
you can imagine
you can
how easy
order.
It would be, for example, to make like an ornament.
Right.
You know, a simple ornament on a stick would be fun. Okay. Well, I brought, in celebration of my own personal Christmas love, I brought the Great American Chocolate Chip Cookie Book by Carolyn Wyman, Scrumptious Recipes and Fabled History from Toll House to Cookie Cake Pie. Mm. And this is a brand new book. And one of the things that popped out me when I saw it was that I had lived near the Toll House in Whitman, Massachusetts, the old Toll House. And so that was a family favorite. And this author just absolutely loves American food pop culture. She has some of her other books are Spam, a Biography.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, yeah. Jell-O, a Biography. And the Great Philly Cheesesteak Book.
Oh, my.
But this particular book is all about the centrality of the chocolate chip cookie to American culture. And I didn't know that it was so important, but obviously it is. And the interesting part of this is that there's all kinds of things in this book, everything from recipes, of course, but the story of Ruth Wakefield and the Toll House, that she and her husband opened the Toll House restaurant in Whitman in 1930. And they were desperate for customers. And in the end, what she did was she was trying to make the signature cookie, something that people would come for. And she assumed that she would use Baker's chocolate because the Baker's Chocolate Company was not too far away. But her wholesaler had a contract with Nestle's.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how Nestle's and Ruth Wakefield in Whitman, Massachusetts came up with the original Toll House cookie recipe, which is still on the back of every single package of Nestle's chocolate chips.
Gotcha.
The interesting thing about this book is that Nestle was marketing its chocolate chips as sort of a war thing. First of all, they were inexpensive, so you could make a batch of chocolate chip cookies and send them to your soldier, you know, away from home, and it would remind them of home when they opened the box. And then there would be a cute little ad on the bottom that says, back the attack with war bonds. Mm. So Nestle's was fully involved in this. And the other interesting thing is how much our culture is permeated by chocolate chip cookies. The Toll House itself became a tourist destination, a place where people would go and buy cookies on purpose. And then also that cookies show up in cartoons. She has a Doonesbury cartoon here that's all heavy politics until he says even revolutionaries like chocolate chip cookies. And there's the whole story of other chip companies too, like Otis Spunkmeyer and Mrs. Fields and companies like that, and how they brought their style of chocolate chip cookie to the American population. And then there's Ruth Wakefield's original recipe, which I think is probably pretty close to the one on the package. But I bet it's like a little bit more old-fashioned, maybe, in ingredients than the one we have now. And then all kinds of recipes, including chocolate chip nut cheese balls. Okay. I'll go for
chocolate it. Chocolate chip cheese balls,
chocolate
did you
chip
say?
Nut cheese balls. You know, basically cream cheese formed in a circle and wrapped in walnuts, graham cracker crumbs, and and chocolate chips.
I think I'll stick with the chocolate chip
cookie. Chocolate chip cookie milkshake. Well, we already, since I was a kid, when I was a kid, would anybody have put chocolate chips on your pancake?
No, right?
No.
I mean, why didn't we think of that?
Or even muffins? Yeah. You know, now you expect to see chocolate chip waffles,
in
pancakes,
everything.
Muffins. Yeah, absolutely. Here's one for pancakes, sour cream coffee, milkshakes, layer cake, bars, and then of course the gluten-free and all that stuff. The other thing is, it's interesting, is the Doubletree Hotel chain has its own.
Is that recipe in there?
Yes.
Doubletree
Hotel like cookies.
Oh, like cookies, yeah.
That they put in a little bag. And so this is really, if you've got a chocolate chip cookie lover, this will help you design the chocolate chip cookie that's perfect for them. Might be crispy, might be cakey. I like cakey ones, and I like walnuts in
mine.
Well,
I would be willing to sample any of those recipes.
Yes, I'm sure you would.
Wants to give that a try.
So this book's absolutely adorable.
We're talking about holiday books with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Melanie Lowers, books editor at the Cape Cod Times. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. And then press the number 5, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're still in the food category, and after your chocolate chip cookie book, we've got another cookie book.
We have another cookie book, and I think that it is always a great thing if you can find any kind of holiday book that you can actually use all year, and this is another one of those books. This is called 100 Best Decorated Cookies, featuring 750 step-by-step photos. So if you're not sure of what you're doing, this is the book for you. Basically, what these are, a lot of them are flat cookies that are decorated, so in shape. So these are mostly shaped cookies, but it's divided by season. So for the winter cookies, for example, they have a snowman, and again, they have directions of how to paint the scarf on. These are painted cookies, I would say. They have snowflake cookies. They have winter hat cookies. They have Christmas bulb cookies, reindeer cookies. All of these are created. So it's basically mostly a sugar cookie, but she has different recipes and different kinds of cookie doughs that you can use for any of these cookies. There's even a gluten-free sugar cookie recipe in here, as well as there's a vanilla orange sugar cookie. So there are some different flavors in here. But what also is in here, which goes with my Cape Cod theme here this morning, which is the under the sea cookies. So you've got
a purple octopus,
for example. There is a beautiful starfish cookie, a dolphin cookie, and these are mostly made with, you know, these are cookie cutter cookies. These are for which you would need to find the right cookie cutter shape in order to make these. But what she's showing you is how to decorate them. That's primarily what she's doing, and the dough which is best for these cookie cutter cookies. Yeah. But really simple directions, lots of photographs, and really a fun book, I think, to use with kids as well as adults.
Yeah. It's got a beautiful bright cover, too.
Sure.
It certainly does. Lots of flip-flops on the cover.
All right, what do we got? Cookies. Cookbook.
This is a gigantic cookbook, the Good Housekeeping Christmas Cookbook, and it is new. And I think that's something you don't see very often, a book of this size. It's almost 400 pages. So this is a major piece of work. And I think it would be a great gift to a couple starting out, that, you know, that someone starting their own home kind of thing, their own settling down, because it has everything in it. Everything you'd want to make, from food to decor to cocktails, party planning, crafts, tree decorating, gifts and wrapping, and it's beautiful. The photos are gorgeous. And again, this is a book where you'll have a really good sense of how to get to the final point in the recipes, but also how to make over recipes. There's, for example, one page where you have the classic eggnog on one side of the page and the healthy makeover eggnog on the other side of the page. So And it's got all the sort of heart healthy, gluten free, kind of nut free recipes too that you'd want to have in a large size cookbook.
And the party planning section, I would think, is really helpful because sometimes it's hard to determine. I've got X number of guests. How much do I need?
Well, the party planning is wonderful, and in fact, in the beginning of the book, they have this this section called the Great Christmas Countdown. That if you're hosting Christmas in your home, it takes you 10 days out from the holiday. Mm. And it takes you step by step each day of what you should do that day to take that step forward. And none of the days are heavy, but each one is, you know, how to think about, you know, supplies and decor and setting a menu, which right. I think is one of the most important things, because if you over menu, you're going to be overcooking and your time is, you know, not going to be enjoyable. Yeah. But everything from silver to even setting up a wine tasting, a holiday wine tasting.
Sounds like fun. And this is actually a book that I brought as well. And I think it's amazing because it has things in it like the party's over stain guide. So after the party, how the day, if it's the day after, if it's right away, what you can do for various kinds of stain, red wine, candle wax, things like that. And it also had one of the most interesting tips for candles that I've ever seen, which I am going to try. The tip is add a few drops of water to holders before inserting candles. Stubs will lift out more easily.
I never knew that.
And the tree decorator's calculator, where they have how much is enough depending on the height of your tree, how many bulbs and decorations you need.
Wow.
Which I think is a little, you know, excessive, but interesting nonetheless. Yeah.
But they also have some really cute handmade ornaments that would be quick to make. Some things out of wrapping paper, some things out of fruits, cones, candies, things that you would just cut out of paper.
No tea bags, huh?
No, I didn't see any tea bags. I remember that. I remember dried tea bags,
Had, like, ornaments from tea bags.
And also gift making. There are all kinds of things that you could make here at the last minute and give as gifts.
Yeah, it's always good to have a couple of those things around for the person who shows up that you weren't expecting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's absolutely, you know, it's a big book. It's $30, I believe, but it would make a wonderful gift.
All right. And we can't forget, there's still a couple other holidays cookbooks we have here.
There are. And there's a big one coming up tomorrow which is Thanksgiving. And for those of you that are panicking, I've got a couple of suggestions
for you. Library is open today,
but the library is open. In fact, we have unusual hours today. We're actually open 9:30 to 5:30 today, which we're normally not open Wednesday morning. So you can come in and find one of these books. As any of you know who have listened to this show for years, I am a huge fan of Laurie Colwin and her short stories, and I often go back to More Home Cooking, A Writer Returns to the Kitchen, and her other book, Home Cooking. But she has some of the funniest things about turkey. Not only does she tell you how to cook the turkey, but she has one chapter in here called Turkey Angst, which begins, "There are times when I am led to believe that I am the only person in the United States who truly likes the taste of turkey, plain old roast turkey that the next day provides plain old turkey sandwiches to be spread with Russian dressing." And she talks about why, you know, the turkey has got such a bad rap. And she says, "In my opinion, the poor turkey is a mere scapegoat for the mire of conflicted feelings flooding our psyches at holiday time. It is hard to divorce the turkey from the expectations of the family table, the sibling rivalries, the unspoken resentments, the secret rages that occur even in the happiest families." And then she goes on to say, "Although turkey is delicious in itself, it is burdened with context, as they say in the literary criticism racket. A turkey without seasonal angst is like a baseball game without the national anthem, a winter without snow, a birthday party without candles. For better and worse, the exhaustion, the exhilaration, the expectations, and the complications are a kind of emotional condiment, the secret element that gives turkey its essential spirit." If you're worried about your turkey, that, you know, and she actually, again, also tells you how to actually cook your turkey. And another great book, which you may be, again, a little late for this year, but next year, this is the book for you if you've had a really tough Thanksgiving this year. It's called Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well by Sam Sifton. And Sam Sifton is the national editor for the New York Times, but he's also the former restaurant critic. And he, in this book, goes through every possible aspect of the turkey, from the turkey to what you're supposed to drink, to the gravy, the cranberry sauce, everything. And he, too, has a sort of the same take on Thanksgiving as Laurie Colwin, although he loves this holiday. He begins saying, "Thanksgiving is not easy. The holiday is for many of us a day of travel, of traffic, and stress. It is a day of hot ovens, increasingly drunk uncles, and crowded dinner tables, of people arriving late or or needing to leave early, of burned yams and spouses who forgot to buy the one thing you ask them not to forget to buy. Thanksgiving can be a hard day to manage. It takes strength. And one of the things I love about this book is he writes so well. I mean, he has, and he's telling stories about past Thanksgivings, but he also has very basic stuff. He has a whole section on turkey terms and types, from your frozen supermarket turkey to your free-range turkey to your heritage turkey. It all has, and he also in the back has pages for notes, so you can keep this book, and all the mistakes you make, you can write down so that next year you won't make it. But the same mistake. But he has great recipes, and he's a really good writer, which is one of the reasons I love this book.
Right. Yeah, one more cookbook.
And one more, of course, tonight is the first night of Hanukkah. So if you are getting ready for that, we have The New Jewish Table by Todd Gray and Ellen Kassoff Gray, who are the proprietors of Washington, D.C.'s Equinox Restaurant, which apparently is a hugely popular restaurant. And what they do have in the back of this book is a complete Hanukkah menu, again, which sounds really good. And this is one of these cookbooks that the photos are so beautiful that you just sort of want to eat everything.
Hungry, yeah.
It makes you hungry looking at the photos. But they do have, for the Hanukkah, they include sweet red pepper hummus, chopped liver with sweet marsala onions, matzah-stuffed Cornish game hens, braised cabbage, Yukon gold and sweet potato latkes, which sounds like an interesting combo, tricolor lentil salad with balsamic vinegar and pine nuts, and dairy-free brownies. So they have recipes for all of these in here, but they also, it's a seasonal cookbook, so they go through every season and gives you holiday recipes and everyday recipes. Really delicious stuff.
Right. We're talking holiday books. If you have something you'd like to add to the list, 866-999-4626, and then press the number 5, 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We usually save the kids' books for last, so we want to make sure we get them in today, so we're going to bring the kids' books up now. What have you got, Melanie?
Well, I have a beautiful new book for Hanukkah called The Eighth Menorah by Lauren L. Wall, and illustrated by Laura Hughes. And the author lives in Lenox, illustrator is in London. And basically the little story asks the question, can a family have too many menorahs? And it's very sweet. I would say it's for toddlers up to, say, age 7 or 8. But basically it's Sam, a young boy, who goes to Hebrew school, and the teacher decides that they're going to make menorahs. And Sam is very conflicted about this because his family has 7 menorahs. And why could they possibly use an 8th menorah? And he's concerned because this is going to be a gift for his grandmother. And it would be really important to have it be just the perfect gift. And of course, he makes the menorah, and grandmother is just delighted with it. So in fact, they're going to have an 8th menorah. And the 8th menorah is going to take its place on the table with the others. And it's absolutely adorable. All the neighbors are introduced. You know, it brings out the issue of the things that worry children, and why they shouldn't worry about those things. And also about other cultures. The story of Hanukkah is included through the teacher, Miss Zuckerman. And in the back of the book, it tells you how to play dreidel, and also what the words mean around the dreidel, the different letters and things in Hebrew. So it's absolutely adorable.
Yeah. You know, since you mentioned menorah, have you seen, you know, of course, we've been talking about Thanksgiving and the first day of Hanukkah, you know, for the first time in 125 years being on the same day. And there was some clever young man who decided to make that turkey menorah. Have you seen that? I sound like hotcakes.
Yes, he's made a bundle on that.
Yeah, I mean, how clever was he?
Is it like pottery or clay?
Maybe he read, I think so. Maybe he read that book.
Might have.
And, you know, he got the idea. But, you know, that also brings up the question. We were discussing this yesterday where Heather Goldstone was saying, where do you find candles for menorahs? That she says it's almost, you can find menorahs, but nobody seems to sell the candles that
most
fit them.
Roach Brothers.
Really?
Absolutely.
She's having a hard time finding
them. Just go to Roach Brothers.
Okay. It's possible they're sold out.
Stop and Shop. Usually grocery stores will sell them.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Really?
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll have to tell her to check there. Another kid's book. What have you got?
This is a great, I love this book. It's called Bear Says Thanks. And it is a great Thanksgiving story, but it's a good story at any time. And it starts out with this bear, of course, all alone in his cave. Bear listens to the wind. Good book for today. He is bored, 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 and he misses his friends. I could make a big dinner, a feast I could share, but he looks through his cupboard and the cupboard is bare. So then his friends all start showing up. And every time somebody shows up, for example, then Mouse stops by with a huckleberry pie and the bear says, thanks. And so it goes on, and more and more animals end up showing up, but the bear is still unhappy because the bear hasn't made any food. But then the mouse says, mouse squeaks, don't fret. There's enough, dear bear. You don't need any food. You have stories to share. His friends hug him tight. It will be all right. And the bear says, thanks. They lay out their feast on a quilt on the ground, and the bear takes a seat while his friends gather round. Mm. It's such a sweet. I love the illustrations. It is illustrated and written by Karma Wilson and Jane Chapman, who are the creators of another book called Bear Snores On, which I'm not familiar with, but really a great story about how everybody can contribute and everybody can say thanks.
Oh, that's nice.
I have a beautiful new book that's focused on Cape Cod, and it's called Santa is Coming to Cape Cod, written by Steve Smallman and illustrated by Robert Dunn, neither one of which is local. And this is a book for ages 4 and up, and it sort of tells the story of Santa, you know, crossing the universe at night to distribute presents and things, but he's coming to Cape Cod. And the illustrations are absolutely beautiful. And it starts with, well, boom, Santa, have all the children from Cape Cod been good this year? And I can just imagine this becoming a family tradition. Mostly, answered the little old elf as he bustled across the busy workshop to Santa's desk. Santa peered down at the elf from behind the tall, teetering piles of letters that the children of Cape Cod had sent him. Mostly, asked Santa, looking over the top of his glasses. Yes. But they've all been especially good in the last few days, said the elf. And I would think that if you started reading this book, it could become a nightly thing all the way through the holiday. This is part of a series of books that start with Santa is coming to fill in the blank. So actually, if you're here on the Cape and you've got grandchildren somewhere else or a child somewhere else, you might want to look this up and see if there's a book for their area, too. Yeah. It's a nice little series.
Great.
I've brought with me this is really a winter book more than a holiday book, but again, it's really cute. It's called If It's Snowy and You Know It, Clap Your Paws by Kim Norman and illustrated by Liza Woodruff. Really fabulous illustrations and a really catchy text. And it begins, if it's snowy and you know it, clap your paws. You can tumble on the tundra just because. If it's snowy and you know it, roll a snowball up and throw it. If it's snowy and you know it, clap your paws. And it goes on to tell you all the things that you might want to do in the winter. So they go ice skating and they go skiing, but all with this sort of the rhymey thing. Mm-hmm. And then they go inside. And for the inside part, it's if it's wintry and you're weary, go inside. Paint a picture of the icy sports you tried. If it's wintry and you're weary, read a book that's warm and cheery. If it's wintry and you're weary, go inside. And they show all of these animals. The rabbit and the bear and the fox all painting and reading books to one another. And, you know, how could a librarian not love this book? And then at the end, they all tuck themselves into bed. So great going to bed story here. But, you know, the rhyming, I think
you
would
could
really
sing this
be,
book.
You could. This is a book you could sing. If you were a singer, this is definitely a book you could sing.
One more?
Well, I discovered this wonderful brand new book called Christmas from Heaven, The True Story of the Berlin Candy Bomber. Mm. Yes, as read by Tom Brokaw and illustrated by Robert T. Barrett. And it's published by the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Apparently, they have an entire series of books that they personally publish, and it includes a DVD of the choir singing all kinds of Christmas songs. The interesting thing is, this is a true story about a young man who was a pilot at the end of World War II. And those of you who are old enough to remember your history, after the end of World War II, Berlin was divided and there were Soviet sectors and there was American sectors, or West versus East. And the Soviets had a blockade going. So what the Americans did was they flew over the blockade and landed and brought all kinds of supplies into Berlin, all kinds of things. Well, this one pilot, he realized, and there's all kinds of pictures of him here. His name was Gail Halverson, he realized that every time he dropped supplies, there would be children lined up along the fences of the airfield waiting to see what was brought. So he started bringing some extra treats of chocolate and gum and things like that and bringing them to the children over on the side of the airfield. And then he decided that he could do more than that. And so he asked if it would be possible to bring more candy. And they decided it would be a great PR thing, first of all, but also Christmas was coming. And in 1948, of course, Berlin was still pretty much in ruins. So what he did was they started making candy parachutes. Little parachutes with bags of candy on them, and on his runs over the city, before he would land, they would drop these little candy parachutes out the side of the plane, and they would come down to the children of Berlin. It's an absolutely lovely story. It's not a little kid's story. It's sort of a family story, and for older children who are interested in history and want to know what other children's Christmases were like, there's actual photographs along with the illustrations, and the story is very interesting. Compelling. And in the back, there's directions on how to make a candy parachute yourself, which I could imagine could be a lot of fun. Yeah. Could also be some trouble, but I think it would mostly be a lot of fun. And then there's wonderful pictures of Halverson as he is now. He's still alive. Wow. And actually, he's celebrated every year some concerts at the Mormon Tabernacle Choir because he was from Utah.
Right. Wow.
And so
is it the CD with Tom Brokaw reading the story?
It's Tom Brokaw reading the story and also music by the Temple Square Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
Very nice.
Lovely set.
All right. And then we've got some traditional holiday books.
Well, this is sort of a historical Christmas book and very interesting. It's called Christmas with the First Ladies, The White House Decorating Tradition from Jacqueline Kennedy to Michelle Obama by Colleen Christian Burke. And what it does is it basically talks about how each first lady brought her spin
her
to
style,
the White House Christmas. But there's also the woman who wrote it apparently wrote to all the first lady's archives, like all the libraries. And apparently there were lots of photos and stories that had never been told before that she got the photo. There's a photo here of President Kennedy handing over a stocking to John John. They're great family photos in here, but there also has some interesting historical tidbits. It has, for example, the gift list that Mrs. Kennedy wrote up at one point for her Christmas list. So even she needed a Christmas list. And it has the presents that they were. So boat for John Jr., parrot for Caroline, drums for each child, teddy bear for John Jr. I mean, very sweet sort of list of what she was planning to get the kids that Christmas. But it also has these little tidbits of White House history. I did not realize that she actually had worked with Hallmark in order to create Christmas cards. It says it was the First Lady's public Christmas efforts that set the country abuzz. Mrs. Kennedy was an artist in her own right, and in 1963, she teamed up with Hallmark to design her own Christmas cards. The cards would be sold wherever Hallmark cards were available, and the proceeds would go toward the proposed $30 million cultural center in Washington, D.C. And she designed two different cards for Hallmark, which I really had never heard before. Mm. And at the end of each chapter, after sort of showing you what each first lady, what their spin on the trees and the food, they put in one either craft that you could, that the first lady, sort of did or did not do, I don't know, but liked, what was one on one of her trees. So, for example, they have Jacqueline Kennedy's enchanted Christmas tree present, and it just is showing you how you can take little boxes and wrap them up and put bows around them. But or it has a food that you could make. And one of the most curious things in this book is, I have to say, Michelle Obama's gingerbread ornaments, which as somebody who makes gingerbread and put them on the trees, and one of the great things about having gingerbread men on the tree is you can eat them. And so gradually, one leg comes off, an arm comes off.
You don't have to put them away.
You don't have to put them away. However, she has created, or somebody in her entourage has created, gingerbread ornaments which you cannot eat.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, what is the fun in that? I don't know. And because the dough is cinnamon applesauce and I laughed just as cinnamon applesauce and glue.
There is a glue that you can eat.
But this is not. This is not an edible glue.
When you spend the whole holiday going, don't eat that.
Exactly.
Don't eat that.
Yeah, right. I would think that would be a serious problem. So I would not recommend these for a family with children in the house. But if you don't like to eat your gingerbread men.
What have you got, Melanie?
Oh, I have a lovely little book called The Greatest Gift, Unwrapping the Full Love Story of Christmas by Amy Vokamp. And it's new, and she's the author of a book called 1,000 Gifts. She's also a global advocate for the poor through a group called Compassion International. She lives in Canada. And this is a book that takes you from December 1st to Christmas with daily readings and things like that, activities for the whole family. So that it's focused on Advent or the preparation for the arrival of Christ. And there's pages in here for you to write your own reflections. And also there's a focus on the Old Testament, the prophets telling of another one coming at some point who will really be the one that everyone is waiting for. And so, for example, on December 1st, that's the first day of Advent, she has a reading from Isaiah that says, "Out of the stump of David's family will grow a shoot. Yes, a new branch bearing fruit from the old root. And the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. In that day, the heir to David's throne," and she talks about making a tree based on this family of David out of which Jesus arises, and decorating that tree one day at a time. In that day, the heir to David's throne will be a banner of salvation to all the world. The nations will rally to him, and the land where he lives will be a glorious place. So if you find that your family is drifting a little bit away from what is the original meaning of Christmas, you can bring this home in candles, in this small, what she calls out of the stump, by making a very small tree, maybe something, a branch or something you have in your yard, and looking for ways to express Advent in your family and out in the world during the whole season. Mm. It's a nice little start. I think a lot of people have probably forgotten that. I think for a lot of people, if they're not church going, they are probably not seeing the unfolding of Advent like those do,
right,
who every Sunday there's another Advent candle, that kind of thing, leading up to Christmas. So it's a nice little book to reintroduce that to your family.
Okay. Jill?
Well, this is about as far away from that book as you can get.
Go for
But this
it.
Is the book I will be spending the month of December with, I'm quite sure. It is called The Big Book of Christmas Mysteries. And as it says on the front of this book, the most complete collection of Yuletide whodunits ever assembled. But it includes stories from all kinds of mystery writers. So no matter what kind of mystery, if you like your cozy, if you like your noir mystery, whatever it is, believe me, there will be a story in here for you. And it includes stories by really well-known writers, Mary Higgins Clark, Ed McBain, Agatha Christie, L.S. Peters, all big names, Ellery Queen, but also people that you may never have heard of. Who knew that Thomas Hardy had ever written a Christmas mystery? I certainly didn't. But in here you can read The Thieves Who Couldn't Help Sneezing. And then there are
some
people.
That doesn't sound like Thomas Hardy.
I know. But this actually appeared. And one of the interesting things about this book is that a lot of these stories are not easy to find. Mm-hmm. This one for the Thomas Hardy, for example, was first published in the December 1877 issue of something called Father Christmas, which must have been some Christmas magazine. And then there are people like Ethel Lena White, who I would have said I'd never heard of. It says it is an unfortunate fact that Ethel Lena White's 17 books are seldom read today, though two motion pictures inspired by her extremely suspenseful novels are in constant rerun, and that would include The Spiral Staircase and The Lady Vanishes, both very big films, which I certainly know about, but had never read any of her books. And this book is edited with an introduction by Otto Penzler, who owns the Mysterious Bookshop in New York City. There are 60 Christmas capers in here, all published between 1877 and 2011. So again, there's sort of something for everyone in here. And he has them all split up by type of kind of Christmas story it might be, whether traditional, funny, Sherlockian, pulpy, uncanny, surprising, so modern, or classic.
Pick your category.
Pick your category of Christmas mystery.
Well, I bought this little book the other day and got wrapped in it that night. It's called A Yuletide Treasury of Poems, Carols, and Songs, Words That Celebrate the Season. And there's everything. It's pretty big. It's a couple hundred pages. But it's full of everything from Sir Walter Scott to Nikki Giovanni, beat poets. I mean, Lawrence Ferlinghetti's in here. And Thomas Hardy is in here with a poem. There are the words to carols, but also the words to popular sort of things that we say to each other at Christmas, plus other kinds of Christmas popular Christmas songs. But what I found in here interesting was there are also two poems by Catherine Lee Bates, Falmouth's own, and one of them is called Santa's Stocking. And it's, of course, it's late 19th, early 20th century, so it's long. But I'm only going to read the first stanza. And this is Santa's Stocking by Catherine Lee Bates. Dame Snow has been knitting all day with needles of crystal and pearl to make a big, beautiful stocking for Santa, her merriest son. And now in some wonderful way she has hung it by twist and by twirl on the tip of the moon and sits rocking old mother, her day's work done. Mm. And I think a lot of these, the more I read, and some of them were absolutely beautiful, just dripping with sentiment, but also really good poetry. So I think that it might be,
that'd be a nice gift. Yeah,
it would be a wonderful gift, but it also would be a fun thing to bring out and freaks maybe let kids pick out which carol they'd like to read, or to have a family gathering or something like that. It would be, it's a pretty little book too. Yeah, so I think it would go.
Well, you know, you were mentioning the Christmas mysteries, and it seems like there's always this, you know, we get a lot of Christmas mystery books out at this time of year. But who knew there were so many Christmas romance books?
Christmas romance seems to be the biggest growth industry in the publishing world. I haven't brought any specific books because there are so many of them, it is hard to know. If you have a favorite Christmas romance, let me know. But this was just an article that appeared in Library Journal back in October on romance, home for the holidays, mostly romance, which include such titles as Kissing Under the Mistletoe, Lady Jenny's Christmas Portrait, A Valley Ridge Christmas, The Sugar Cookie Sweetheart Swap, Christmas on 4th Street, A Sprinkling of Christmas Magic, Take Me Home for Christmas, Christmas on Main, Once a Rake, which doesn't... Oh, that was for the rest of the year. Excuse me, that's not a Christmas romance. Christmas in Snowflake Canyon. And the most popular right now on Cape Cod, of course, is A Seaside Christmas, which is another big romance. But really a huge growth industry for romance readers is this Christmas.
Who knew? This
seems to be the most recent thing, because there every year there's something else, of which there's a lot.
I've been looking at the cover of this book with the cute little puppy and the Santa's hat. What is that?
What is a holiday without a dog?
Oh. You know?
And this one is called The Dogs of Christmas, a novel by W. Bruce Cameron. And Mr. Cameron, this is a new novel. He has published, and I think he's got puppies on the brain, A Dog's Purpose, A Dog's Journey, and 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Daughter, which I think has nothing to do with, with dogs. But obviously, he made his money on that one, and he moved on. If you remember right, that was turned into a television show. Mm-hmm. It was popular for a while. But this is really cute. And what it's a story of is a man who's sort of disaffected. And he just wants to be left alone. And he has a neighbor who's kind of a, you know, can't handle his own business and is always looking for help and stuff. And what he needs is help bringing his dog to the vets. And so in a disgruntled manner, this guy takes the dog to the vet, and he has a pickup truck and he does everything he can for her. And when he brings her out of the vet again, he puts her in the truck and he notices out of the corner of his eye, there's a box in the back of the truck. And anybody doesn't think anything about it, you know, it just doesn't cross his mind. He gets home and he's bothered by it. And he keeps walking by the window, and it's storming outside, of course. Mm-hmm. And he notices that box. Where did that come from? And he's thinking about it. And then he looks closer and he says on the side of it, it says, for Santa. So, of course, what does he do? He's got to find out, you know, somebody put this box in the wrong truck or whatever. And he goes out, and what does he find?
A puppy.
Box of puppies.
Oh, dear.
A box of puppies shivering and cold in the truck. And so even though he's very annoyed, you know, he's a disgruntled person, he must bring the puppies in. And amazingly, they warm up under his gentle touch. And they become the dogs of Christmas.
All right. We've got a minute left.
I would say how this book ever ended up in the public library, I'm not sure, but this, because you can essentially take the whole thing apart. It's called A Country Living Book, Deck the Halls, Christmas Note Cards, Labels, Ornaments, and Other Festive and Fun Projects. And one of the festive and fun things is that you can tear the whole book apart. It's got stickers. It's got flowers. You can put poke out and add to a stick and make as a centerpiece. It has recipe cards that you can rip out and put your recipes. It's got stickers in it. It has a way to make beautiful gingerbread houses in here. It has a little bit of everything. It has stickers for your packages that you, again, can rip out. Why this is in the library,
and obviously new because it's still in one piece.
It's still in one piece. It is. I must be the first person who checked this book out. So it has lots of great ideas in it, but again, you probably want a copy of your own.
And if you weren't keeping notes, we will have the list of all the books we talked about here today available on the website a little bit later today at capeandislands.org. You'll find the point under the programs tab. Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library. Melanie Lowers, books editor at the Cape Cod Times. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.